Coming up this week, I get to share my experiences at Tech Forum Chicago from the good folks at Tech and Learning Magazine. What a great experience about all kinds of things with educational technology. All that and more coming up next on the Wells Tech Podcast. This is Wells Tech, a podcast on the Streams Media Network sponsored by Wells, Wisconsin Evangelical Lutheran Synod. Your show hosts are Martin Spriggs and Sally Draper. Join the conversation at wellstech.wells.net. Welcome back, everybody, to another edition of the Wells Tech Podcast. This is episode 236 for May 16th, 2012. This is a show where technology and ministry are discussed, and we try and figure out where they cross. And to help me do that, as usual, Sally Draper from Sleepy Eye. Good morning, Sally.
Good morning, Martin. Happy to be joining you yet again as we continue our march into tech and ministry topics. 236 times we've done this.
Yeah, belated Happy Mother's Day and happy birthday, I understand.
Well, thank you, sir. Yep, we managed to do some major celebrating around here all in one day. Mm-hmm. So,
did you happen to be born on Mother's Day?
No, it was a Thursday.
Okay, yeah, my daughter
back
was
back in the day.
My daughter was born on Mother's Day way back in the day.
Very special.
25 years ago.
I
was down in El Paso last week, and obviously a very large Hispanic population there, over 50% or more. And the Spanish or Mexican Mother's Day is always on May 10th, so it doesn't matter where in the week it falls. So it makes it a little bit easier to keep track of. So it's always May 10th.
Very fun.
So we ran into problems finding a restaurant to eat at because we were trying to go out on Mother's Day, which happened to be on a Thursday night. But that was kind of fun.
Yeah, we celebrated by eating out, too. We've got this local restaurant called the Solar Drive-In, which we just love. And they have all this really fresh stuff. As a matter of fact, they even have their own garden and stuff. So they do a lot of real organic stuff. And Habnum Place right here, it's actually in Springfield, Minnesota. So,
is it truly a drive-in or is it a
park? I guess back in the day it was, but they've closed it in now. So it's internal seating. And then they have Wi-Fi. I mean, it's just really a neat place.
Well, that did it for you.
It did. Yeah. We did something cool too. I have this app on my iPad called PhotoSynth. It's a Microsoft app where it does the panoramic.
It stitches photos. It together. Yeah.
And there were nine of us there, and there was a Lazy Susan in the middle of the table.
Oh,
so we set
boy.
The iPad on the Lazy Susan and rotated it around and took a photo of the whole group of us. It was very fun. Of course, it took us three tries to get everybody correctly in the photo, but what a fun thing.
Oh, boy, did you guys look like geeks, I'm sure.
We are total geeks. That's right. Proud of it.
Oh, that's cool. That's cool. Well, the topic of the day is another trip I took 2 weeks ago now, down not quite as far as El Paso, but this time down to Lincolnshire, Illinois, which is a northwest suburb of Chicago. I went down for something called Tech Forum Chicago, which is put on by the group called Technology and Learning, or Tech and Learning. They produce a magazine. I think we've even featured them in a previous show. And so they put on these tech forums. I think there's four or five across the country throughout the year. They bring together speakers, and they have roundtable discussions and everything related to education and technology. So it's really focused on educational technology. They have vendors there, so a big expo that they have, and then a keynote. And I went down there since it was so close. It's only maybe an hour and a half from the office here, and sat in for the day. It was just a day-long thing, and felt that it would be nice to do a recap for our listeners. I know many of our listeners are involved in educational technology, and I learned a lot. I am not truly an educator, although I do a lot of workshops, those kinds of things. I'm not in a regular classroom preparing lesson plans and building curriculums, those kinds of things. But I found it really, really interesting to sit and listen to. You know, these are leaders that attend these that are really on kind of the cutting edge. So they're leading school districts or virtual schools or different higher-level positions that are really grappling with how technology fits into the educational landscape. And it was interesting to hear them talk about what they're planning on, what they're using budget dollars for, and just a great experience.
Sounds like a lot of fun. I'm glad that you were there and were our virtual eyes and ears, because I've been just in preparation for the podcast reading through your notes and following some interesting links and things, and always get really excited about new ideas for use in the classroom and ways that technology can assist with learning.
Mm-hmm. So what I did is I obviously took notes along the way, and I blogged about it. So on my blog or on the Synod blog, either one, martinspriggs.com, or if you go to blogs.wells.net/technology, you can read these. And I attended kind of four sessions altogether, and I blogged about three of them. The first one was the keynote, of course, so I gave a little bit of a recap there. The featured speaker was a professor, college professor now, but had been in elementary school or at least high school level classrooms. His name was Dean Chereski. He speaks quite a bit. He's got a great blog called ideasandthoughts.org. He is at the University of Regina up in Canada. And he talked about a number of different things, but basically the place of technology in education today, and address some common obstacles, some common barriers that are thrown up maybe by teachers a little bit more resistant to technology. So I just kind of captured a couple of key, catchphrases or phrases or statements or quotes that he made, and then my impressions of them. And I'll only pick one out of this particular blog post. He said, "Teaching without technology is educational malpractice." And that's a pretty bold statement, I thought. But then when you think about it, it's really no different. And I make this point in the blog. So if you go to a doctor and he prescribes remedies that had long been replaced with more modern, effective ones, would you go back to that doctor? And so is that any different than a teacher maybe not using the tools of the trade that are available or at their disposal in favor of more antiquated ones? It's kind of like a person in a buggy watching modern cars sail by and say, "Oh, this is a fad." It's really not. Mm-hmm. It's something that you have to pay attention to, and that was kind of the point of the conference. How do you do that with the extremely busy schedules that teachers have, and they're overworked and underpaid, and now you're asking them to kind of think differently about how to educate children through these modern gadgets and websites and other digital tools?
I think that's a great thing for everyone to kind of get that shock value from. Those are hard words to hear, but mm-hmm. I think worth serious consideration. Just in our little school here in Sleepy Eye, with me kind of behind it doing all kinds of technology things in the computer lab setting with the kids, it's hard. It's hard for our teachers. It's hard for me to find time to work with the teachers to actually take a deeper plunge, mm-hmm. So we're doing it little by little. And we do have technology inroads, but there's so much potential, Yep. So, maybe it's worth the shock of, educational malpractice even. Mm-hmm. So,
yeah. So, but he was a good speaker, and I really enjoyed him being very honest and forthright. Now, not everybody would agree with all of his points. One cool little video he showed was called mm-hmm. Kane's Arcade. I don't know if you had a chance to view that, Sally, but everybody should look at that. It wasn't relevant to any specific point, but it was just an example of kind of an inspirational video talking about how a kid kind of caught an entrepreneurial spirit, started his own little cardboard arcade, and somebody made a documentary, a small documentary on it, used social media to bring attention to it, just using a lot of the tools of today, and kind of a fun story.
Yeah, I really enjoyed that. Had to share that one for sure, but very inspirational, and I think kids would be inspired by it as well.
Oh, I think so,
That this young man did this and got this kind of response because of his dream and following his dream. But mm-hmm. as educators, we need to we need to be in tune to that kind of thing.
And encouraging it.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
For sure.
The second session that I attended, or actually the True First workshop beyond the keynote, was very interesting. And we have talked a little bit about this concept of a flipped classroom on the show before. I know Kurt Gosdeck up in Keewaskum has sent in a couple voicemails on this, and I know there are a couple classrooms in our Synod doing this, but I never truly understood the concept till I went through this workshop. And this workshop actually was live streamed, and you can go and view the whole workshop online even still now just by clicking on the link in the blog post. But really the concept of a flipped classroom is you bring the homework into the classroom and the lecture, you take that home. So you're using technology to record the screencast or your lecture or whatever. It's usually an abbreviated or shortened version, mostly because you don't have all the interruptions that go on, you know, when you're delivering a lesson in class. So the students are asked to view the lecture or the material at home, usually in a video format, maybe take notes and then come into class and do their homework or other exercises around that. So it offers a number of different opportunities for learning that you don't normally have in the classroom. First of all, it gives the student a built-in resource to ask questions, you know, when you maybe don't have those when you're doing your homework at home. And it also gives that one-to-one opportunity for a teacher to work with individual students on different issues and topics or pieces of the assignment so they get a little bit better rapport and a better understanding of where a student is and where they're struggling. So makes a lot of sense to me, and of course I like the technology side of it because you're using some of our favorite tools from TechSmith, one of the big tools that they mentioned there that you really need to get comfortable with is Camtasia. Camtasia Studio allows that nice presentation through screencast and webcam integration and with transitions and, you know, posting it easily online through screencast.com or wherever. Just kind of an eye-opener for me that and it makes a lot of sense. Now, I don't have an opportunity to flip a classroom, but I'd be interested in seeing some of our classrooms do this.
I'm just thinking about our training that we do for Wells, and maybe I should be flipping things around and having them watch videos before they come to my classes. Mm-hmm. But anyway,
yeah,
a couple of thoughts I had on this. One was kind of a one-off of the idea of creating your own videos is that a lot of textbooks now are coming out with video as well. I know my sons have a particular math curriculum. I can't remember what it is, but they can watch videos before they do their homework. And, mm-hmm. and videos are provided for every single lesson, mm-hmm. many times multiple videos. And so as a teacher, that might relieve some of your prep time to make use of some of the videos that are coming out with the textbooks as well.
Right.
So just another idea. So maybe you focus your flipped classroom videos in a different subject area because this particular textbook series has videos that you can make use of
already.
Yeah,
that's a great point. And they did make that too, that you don't have to create the videos, you know, new each time, that there is content out there that could be used to present that. If you watch the live stream, one of the teachers that was presenting, this is all from one school that had done this somewhere in Illinois, was a Spanish teacher, and she had found just some incredible resources of another Spanish teacher who had taken the time to put a lot of videos together, which she really used as a kind of a digital textbook. And was able to repurpose those. So she had very little effort other than to ask them to view those, and then she would build lessons around those, and that's what the classroom time was spent at. So,
wow, that's just got to be golden when you discover something like that. One more thought. I loved your list at the end of your blog post, a number of tips for teachers interested in getting started. Start slow, ask the students to take notes, work with the parents so that they don't think that you're a slacker,
surfing the web and saying, you know, just watch this video. Yeah,
exactly. Help them understand how the learning process is shifting a little bit in your classroom. And then the last one I really appreciated. First of all, keep the videos under 20 minutes. You want to keep their their attention. And when it gets too long, that's kind of difficult. Mm-hmm. And then ask them a question or have them write down something in particular from near the end of the video mm-hmm. and show you, you know, where they have, I don't know, pink is my favorite color or whatever mm-hmm. written down in their notes to basically serve as a
check and balance, right?
Checkpoint
yep.
for the students.
Yeah, that was the exact example that one of the teachers gave. She said, well, sort of three quarters of the way through, I'll say, my favorite color is pink. Make sure you write that down, and then she can check the students' notes to see how far. Now, I suppose they would catch on over time, and then, you know, friends could share, you know, make sure you have this written down. But I'm sure there's other ways to do that, too.
But yeah, definitely worth thinking through all the ramifications mm-hmm. of flipping your classroom.
Yep, yep. So
good stuff.
All right. And then the last blog post I wrote was on a roundtable that I attended. This is a little bit different than kind of an open session. This was kind of a smaller group, about 25 people got together around a big table or a couple of big tables and talked about, I call it the death of textbooks. They were talking about curating curriculums, probably a negative and a positive way to look mm-hmm. at things. But they were really talking about, you know, where are paper textbooks going? Is there a future for them? They're very expensive. One of the largest expenses for a school, other than the, you know, the salaries and benefits that are paid to staff, is textbooks and content. So they're really asking the question, you know, where do you want to put your money? Do you want to put money in content, or do you want to put it someplace else? And a lot of them were deciding, hey, we're not going to put it into content. Content is available in many cases for free out there. You have to look for it and curate it and bring it together. We're going to rather use those monies, and a lot of the large school districts in Chicago now are in Illinois, are allowing this, where you can take the money that is budgeted for textbooks and put it into hardware. So you can, you know, put it into Chromebooks or iPads or netbooks or whatever. A lot of schools are doing that. Now, that puts a load on the teachers, obviously, because now they have to build their own curriculum, build their own material. But they talked a lot about different ways to do that, too, doing it together, collaborating on that. A number of different websites that you could go to find kind of pre-built curriculums or started curriculums that you could build off of. And one of the big points they said is use a learning management system. And we've talked about these in the past, Sally. Blackboard and Moodle. Moodle is the platform that we use. But there were a couple new ones out there called Gaggle and OpenClass. And I think more and more are coming to the fore. And as you're putting digital content online, or as you're building digital curriculum, you obviously need a system like this to track progress, to take quizzes and tests and kind of make sense of it all. So lots of good stuff, a lot of ideas flying around in that discussion, that round table.
I think kind of a step down from those is a site like Schoology or Edmodo,
yeah. mm-hmm.
you know. And so it's hosted, and you operate within their confines and maybe don't have all the flexibility
yep.
that you would have on the more robust specific learning management systems, but you might be able to do the same kind of thing there.
Yeah, Schoology was actually one of the vendors. I didn't get a chance to talk with them, but they were in the expo themselves.
Cool.
Edmodo was not. But lots of good stuff there. And then the last session, maybe we could just touch on, that I attended was called, which I didn't write a blog post on, was There's an App for That. And two ladies who were in the app space, both of them on the iPad side, had iPads. One was a consultant, one I think was a teacher, who presented just a laundry list of different potential learning apps or apps that could be used in the educational context for mostly for iPads. So there was a nice laundry list and good resources that they presented, and just a wealth. You know, the challenge is not so much is there an app for that, but where is that app mm-hmm. for that? Because it's finding it and ultimately using it for whatever purpose you have in mind.
Yeah, great list, and we can have a link in the show notes to the notes that were shared with you as a meeting participant mm-hmm. with all the links that they provided to apps. It's a pretty long list,
it is,
but
yeah.
one that was right near the top that I just tapped into was this ebook available in iTunes called Hot Apps for Hots. And it's by Lisa Johnson and Yolanda Barker. And we'll have a link to that specifically in the show notes as well. It's a free EPUB download. Works in your iBooks app on the iPad for sure. And what I liked about this was they framed it all with Bloom's taxonomy and gave you specific step-by-step instructions on how to do activities with each of the apps that they demonstrated. I have an app on my iPad that the kids love. It's called Talking Ben, I think is the name of it. And they actually, and basically it's a little dog that repeats anything you say to it.
Yeah.
And so you can make screenshots of them, and you can, within the app, make videos of whatever he's talking about, whatever you're telling him to say. Basically, he just echoes it back to you. But they had the kids explaining, you know, projects using the Talking Ben app, so that Ben does the explanation in a video format, which is really hilarious and fun for the kids to record, as well as for other people to watch and things. So mm-hmm. I love the step-by-step instructions that they give in this ebook. So you'll want to check that out.
Yeah, because they basically their chapters are Bloom's taxonomy, and which I'm sure is very familiar to a lot of our educational audience. So. Cool book, and they're using the technology to share the technology. So,
yeah, great cool. example.
Yep. All right. Well, speaking of technology, we spoke with a dedicated lay member of a congregation in St. Paul, Minnesota, at Emmanuel Hmong Lutheran Church, who is using technology to share native speaking Hmong sermons with not just their local congregation, but they have a neat relationship with some congregations out in California who have a need for Hmong services but don't have a dedicated pastor to provide them. So we spoke with Shua. Now you got to help me with the last name, Sally. Shua Mwa, and we apologize, Shua, if we butchered either one of those names. But he took some time with us, which we were very appreciative of. And he kind of led us through the process of how they got started, what technologies they're using to share this, and a great website to facilitate this cross-cultural ministry to the Hmong community. So without further ado, let's listen to Shua. We're very happy to have with us Shua Mwa from St. Paul, Minnesota. Good morning, Shua.
Good morning.
How are you?
Pretty good.
And you are a member at Emmanuel Hmong Lutheran Church in St. Paul. There you're a treasurer and member, of course, but one of the reasons we wanted to talk to you was some web stuff that you're doing in your ministry to the Hmong community. So thanks for joining us. Maybe before we get started, you can tell us a little bit about yourself, what your background is, how long you've been in the congregation, those kinds of things.
Sure. I moved here in the state with a single parent and my siblings back in 1992. Came to the state when I was the age of 12, and my grandfather and my family are a big Hmong shaman, and my grandfather, he's, you know, it's kind of like the grandmaster of Hmong shaman, and I grew up all my life, you know, worshiping the devil and doing all the traditional culture, and so I came to, God found me in 94, 95. They took me to congregation class and, you know, loved the basketball and loved the sports activities and fell in love with the Bible class. And it sort of took off from there. Right now, all my families and my siblings go to Emmanuel Hmong Lutheran Church I'm married, and I have two kids, a boy and a girl, Leah, four and a half, and Nathan, two and a half.
Mm-hmm.
We are very happy with Emmanuel. We learn a lot about God and how to, you know, give back to the community and how to reach out to other home brothers and sisters, you know, lost souls out there, and do as much as we can. So.
Great. So I assume since you're the congregation treasurer, your day job is something in the financial world. What do you do for a living?
No, my day job is I'm in an IT world.
Ah, okay.
And, yeah, so I
well,
work
you're among
for
friends
a local,
here.
Local bank, yeah. Well, I work for a local bank. It's Bremer Financial Corporations.
Yeah, okay.
Here in St. Paul station at the where I work, it's the office is in the Lake Gilmore office. So I enjoy IT, and so I thought, you know, that's a gift and a talent that God has blessed me with. It, so I want to use that back to do what I can to give it back, to do ministry work and to do as much as I can to, you know, reach out to all parts of the world and also still, mm-hmm. and also to the young generation.
Yeah, absolutely. Tell us maybe a little bit more about Emmanuel, where you're a member, maybe when it was established and how large is it now, and does it have any sister congregations there that you're sharing facilities with?
Sure. Emmanuel Hmong started out in 1992 with Emmanuel Lutheran Church in St. Paul. And at that time, there were only half a dozen of Hmong families and immigrants, and they congregate on a Sunday with Pastor Lawrence Steele. After Pastor Joe Yang passed away, Pastor Peng I forget the other one, but they stood in his place and lead the congregations, and we went from half a dozen families to now over 220 members.
Mm-hmm.
And we grew, yep, and we went from two men leading the group to now we have over 20 or 25 plus adult, full-grown adult men leading the men's group, and we have the ladies group, the youth group, and, you know, and we also have a full choir for the kids and the women's group and the adults. So God has really, you know, brought us, and we have grown a lot since 92. Today we are worship at St. John Lutheran Church in St. Paul, and, you know, they're kind enough to allow us to use the facility. We share the facility, and we have worship in the afternoon after the Anglo congregation. And so we have the youth and the church, the other groups, you know, we're blessed to have the facility so they can use it for Friday choir practice and also confirmation class and things like that. So we are really blessed, and we know that in a few years God will, you know, in 10, 15 years, God will take us to, you know, the point where we're able to purchase a church and maintain our own church.
Very exciting. So lots of activity going on there in the St. Paul area, but there's also a very special connection with your congregation and a congregation in, where is it, San Jose, of all places, all the way out in California. Emmanuel and St. Andrew Hmong congregation, maybe in Sacramento, mm-hmm. have a unique tie. Can you tell us a little bit about the history between those congregations?
Yes. So as I mentioned earlier, it started out with just Pastor Peng and the other pastor. I apologize, I don't remember his name, but... And we went from there and the gospel has really spread out, and we have more Hmong families and congregation, you know, brothers and sisters out there that are interested in the gospel. And so in 2005, a Hmong congregation was formed in St. Andrew. And so Pastor David Lohr and his family was called out there, and he was installed in 2005 to lead the Hmong congregation in St. Andrew. Unfortunately, his illness made it impossible for him to continue his ministry work, and he had to move back in 2006 back to St. Paul with his relatives so they can help take care of him. And he's now with Pastor David Lowe is now a member at Emmanuel Hmong. And also with that, the congregation down by Sacramento, they don't have any pastor or any leaders to lead them.
Sure.
So it's really difficult for the Hmong congregation down there, as they don't speak English. A lot of the elders and families, they don't speak English, so it's hard for them to be in the regular Anglo worship.
Mm-hmm.
And so we are really blessed that the Apostle Church, the staff and their team, you know, we like to thank them. They step in, and this is the type of ministry that they've done in the past in some other group out there. And they bought equipment, and they train out men and Emmanuel Hmong to, you know, how to record the video sermon and how to edit the videos. The sermon, initially they provide the link, so we upload the videos to their host website so they can stream the video. And the Hmong congregation at St. Andrew, they will congregate on a Sunday and watch the Sunday worship sermon. And so it's been really helpful. To this day, we still have 15 to 20 Hmong brothers and sisters down by St. Andrew Lutheran Church, and they still continue to watch the weekly sermon that we record.
That's awesome. So this connection was made by this Apostles Church in San Jose. That's where the San Jose came in. And they must have had somebody techie in their congregation who was aware of using video in this way. And so almost a coast-to-coast connection through video. That's a neat story.
Yes. They other than the being able to reach out using the technology, a lot of our men at our church, they learn a lot about, you know, something else other than, you know, besides the ministry. Mm-hmm. They learn how to use a camcorder, how to operate the computer, how to edit the videos. And so it's also been a very educational lesson for them, too.
That's neat.
And do you, I understand you also are in charge of the Emmanuel Hmong website. Is that correct, Shua?
Yes, I'm doing that as a part-time to volunteer job and to help assist with recording the Sunday worship, any choir song, any other activities going on, so we can share with the other Hmong congregation in other parts of the nations and other states.
Mm-hmm. And it looks like in order to get your videos online, you're using a YouTube channel. Is that right?
Yes. We host and we stream out video through media.com, mediaserver.com, and it's been quite expensive because of, you know, the rate. And so we discovered that, you know, now that YouTube is free, and YouTube is a really known resource out there. And also one of the reasons that we decided to go YouTube is because YouTube has the Android, and everybody can access YouTube video from mm-hmm. Your mobile device, and it's free, and it's got the same statistic that that we get from other host website.
Mm-hmm.
And so when we converted to YouTube since January, you know, we save a lot of money, and it's really robust because anyone can access the video from a mobile device, and they don't have to be on a computer, which is nice. And from the statistic, from the YouTube statistic, we were able to gather, you know, some quite amazing, you know, information as far as age, demographic, the locations. I just learned this morning that 25% of the viewers are male, 75% are female.
Hmm.
40% of the YouTube viewers were YouTube suggested a video where they go in and type Hmong, and then it came up with, so YouTube and Google you know, they integrated these and they made the search, and it's a really unique tool. And the other interesting thing is that 27% of the viewers were mobile apps and direct. And so that, I'm expecting to see that number increase.
Mm-hmm.
The other 14% and 19% were YouTube search and, you know, some other breakdown miscellaneous. But it's really interesting to see that YouTube refer a lot of our videos. 40% were YouTube suggested video that directed to our website, you know, our YouTube channel. And we hope to push and increase the mobile apps and the direct. You know, we want to take that from 27% to 50%,
mm-hmm.
so that our brothers and sisters and other viewers out there can watch a Sunday sermon on their phone or on the tablet. We like to make it so that it is easy to access, because we didn't get the rating was not as quite high before, because you have to be on your computer. And it's not compatible with your mobile or your tablet, and so it made it difficult.
Right. Yeah, that's extremely important, and will be even more important, as you said. And it sounds like you're getting some what I would call drive-by views rather than just people who know about it. People are finding it via search, which is great. That's one of the reasons to have it on YouTube. So I understand there's a new program or project that you're starting this spring in the area of radio. Tell us a little bit about what you're doing with radio in the Twin City area.
We also like to engage and cater to the older generations, and they don't know how to use a computer or a mobile device, but they're very techy with the classic radio and the audio in the car. So we learned that they like to listen to the Hmong radio. So a few weeks ago we started recording. Pastor Peng started recording his sermons, and we broadcast that through the AM radio stations. And so we broadcast that twice a week, and it's been, we haven't had any statistic back, but it looks like a lot of the hosts that we talk to and a lot of the people that we talk to, they're just exciting to have us as part of the Hmong radio broadcast, because it, the church is able to teach, you know, to bring love and to the couples out there that have issues and family issues. And so they really, it looks like they really need the Sunday sermons and the counseling,
mm-hmm.
and so that's one of the things that's lack out there in the Hmong audio, is that they broadcast about the non-Christian, which doesn't provide mm-hmm. counseling for families and for children and for lost soul, and so it's really exciting to see that the demand is out there, and they're just super excited to have us as part of the broadcast.
Mm-hmm.
Sounds like a great way to do outreach in your local area. What about other tech plans for your future, Shoa? Is there anything else on the horizon at this point?
You know, I'm actually started thinking about partnered with some other developers that I friends out there that I know, and you know, hopefully in 3 to 5 years, we'd like to, you know, develop some Android app or an iPhone app. So that, you know, we can call it Hmong Ministry or something like that, an app that they can put on their phone, and it will notify them, just like the Facebook app and some of the apps, that will notify them whenever we have new activities going on within the Hmong Ministry, whether it be a new video, new sermon, something's going on, so that they're always stay connected. So that's one of my dream, is that, you know, if we, you know, we can get some volunteers out there and we can develop these apps, and, you know, it would be another step, another challenge that, and I believe in God, that God's going to help us, you know, and get through, you know, some of these obstacles, and, you know, with God, anything and everything's possible.
Yep. Wonderful. Blessings on that work. Thanks so much for taking the time with us today. Share with our listeners where they can find the stuff that you've been doing. What is the website and YouTube channel? How do they find that?
If they go to emmanuelmong.net, that's I-M-M A-N-U-E-L, Hmong, H-M-O-N-G.net. We have both link, the video sermon link, and also there's a YouTube logo at the lower bottom of the website. If they click that, that's probably the best way to get directly. It's going to take them to the sermon, the weekly sermon videos, mm-hmm. also and all the other choir and solo song video that we have out there. But otherwise, they can just go into youtube.com and search Emmanuel Hmong, and some of the videos, some of the links should come up.
Great. Thank you, Shoei. Appreciate your time, and Lord's continued blessings on your work, and we'll check back in at some point in the future and see how things are going. Thank you for sharing.
Thank you for having me today.
Mm-hmm. Our pleasure.
Thank you.
Sally, it's always good to hear stories like this where congregations are working together to spread the gospel, especially here in a foreign language, at least a foreign language to us.
Absolutely. It was really inspiring. You can tell that Shua loves what he does and mm-hmm. Is very dedicated. And you can also visit their YouTube channel. We'll have a specific link to that in the show notes, along with links to their websites. But the YouTube channel is really amazing. I watched several of their videos, not just the preaching, but also the choir singing.
Right, cool.
Large groups of youth, of children, of different groupings of women and mm-hmm. men's choirs and things. They obviously love their Savior, and just really exciting to see. And after we were done with the interview, Shua even told us that they can tell from their stats that the United States and France are the top countries that visit mm-hmm. And make use of their resources on YouTube. And he was really encouraged by that because France apparently has a large lung population.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So you can see the outreach from St. Paul around the world.
Yep. Awesome. Thanks, Shua, for your time. Really appreciate that. Blessings on your continuing work in his name.
Most definitely.
Let's move on to ministry resources, Sally.
Yeah, we have a couple of things to share. First on the list is a conference that's coming up in October of this year. Mm-hmm. It's the Media Outreach and World Missions Conference, sponsored by the Christ and Media Institute at Bethany Lutheran College in Mankato, Minnesota. Mm-hmm. The dates are October 12th through 14th, and the registration for the conference is only $50, so it sounds like a really reasonable conference to attend. They expect to have world missionaries there, leaders of national church bodies, in fellowship with the CELC from around the world, mm-hmm. and members of boards and commissions, and just a great conversation around using technology to do mission outreach.
Yep.
And so
good.
Maybe worth some of our techies to attend.
I will be there myself.
Cool.
And I know many of the – there's seven presenters. They're really not as much presenters as they're presenting some statements around which a discussion will happen. So it's really almost a roundtable discussion on these topics. And this is going to be cool. I'm looking forward to going out there and spending some time with the folks. So consider it's just a stone's throw for many people, Mankato, Minnesota. Probably beautiful in October.
I'm sure. October 12th through 14th. That's a Friday through a Sunday.
Yep.
And then we also want to make mention that I saw a notice that the Bible app that is produced by Life Church TV, the YouVersion Bible, basically, is now available for Nook.
Mm-hmm.
So if you have a Nook tablet, you can now get the Bible app for your Nook. And we'll have a link in the show notes.
Awesome. Very good. Mm-hmm. Let's move right along to our picks of the week.
And my pick of the week is a blog post. It's from the blog Internet Toolbox for Churches. We talked about this blog not too long ago, one that I just recently started following. And they do a little podcast as well as a different blog post. This one's titled, How Your Church Can Use Post Types to Be More Interesting on Facebook. So this is specifically for those that have Facebook pages for your church or perhaps for your school. And what they're saying is that, you know, a lot of times on Facebook, we get real caught up in the status updates. That's probably the most popular thing mm-hmm. to do on Facebook. But there are other things you can do on your Facebook page. You can add photo and video. You can add events, milestones, and questions or polls.
Mm-hmm.
And it gives some really great examples and ideas videos around each of those different content types and encourage you to kind of mix it up and not just be caught up in one. For example, for events, it says events get people excited, and you can share events that are happening online, offline, or virtually. So maybe online events, if you have an online prayer group or a pastor chat time or a question and answer group or whatever it might be, you could share those. Certainly your offline events like Bible studies or community service events or whatever they may be. And then even virtual events or opportunities where everybody agrees to pray at noontime on Friday or something to that effect, mm-hmm. as an example. Making events is a way to generate some excitement. The other one I really liked was the milestones. Now that Facebook has gone to the timeline kind of view, you could go back and build some of your church history and input dates and things, you know. And they said, you know, obviously there's going to be some things around, you know, the dates that you were founded or your school started or whatever it might be, but maybe big strategic decisions or records set, like 35 children were baptized this year,
right,
or something like that. I thought there were some really great ideas.
That is a great idea. I like that a lot. So that's pretty easy to do too.
Exactly. So yeah, check out the full blog post. I've just touched on a few things, but I think if you've got someone that's interested in your congregation and keeping the content fresh on your Facebook page, these are some really new ideas that you might enjoy making use of.
Cool tip. Thanks, Sally.
Hey, you bet.
My pick is kind of the mirror image of my pick last week. You might remember last week, Sally, I picked one of your favorite products, TechSmith Snagit, mm-hmm. which has a Windows and a Mac version. But
Camtasia Studio, huh?
No, I picked Snagit. Didn't I pick Snagit?
I'd have to look.
I thought it was Snagit. Maybe it was Camtasia.
I think it was Camtasia.
Okay. Well,
but,
a related product is called Snagit. I think you've picked Snagit in the past.
I have.
And you use it every day.
I sure do.
But Snagit is a screen capture or screen snapshot annotation tool, mm-hmm. By the same makers as Camtasia Studio. So it's kind of a mirror copy. But mm-hmm. There is a free tool that does a lot of the same things. This is Mac only. It was recently purchased by Evernote, which we've talked about in the past, which is a great note-taking tool called Sketch. Sketch is available on Mac, Android, and iPad/iPhone. And it really just is a screen capture tool. You take a snapshot of a desktop, your desktop or your browser or any app that's open, and then you have the ability to annotate with a pen, text, shapes, arrows. You can upload it to the Sketch website or to Evernote and share it that way. You can resize, crop, rotate, flip images. You can take photos using your webcam or the camera on the phone or the iPad, and then save in a bunch of, I think there's like 12 different formats you can save this to: PNGs, TIFFs, JPEGs, GIFs, PDFs, whatever. And just a very simple tool, free, can be downloaded via the Mac App Store or the App Store on your iPad or iPhone or in the Android, what do they call it now? Android Play.
Marketplace?
They call it Play now, I think. Google Play, maybe.
Sure.
So it's available in all of those places. So if you are working in any of those environments and need to do any screen capture and then annotate that screen capture or screen grab, Sketch is a tool that you may want to consider using. It's a nicely done app. It's been around for quite a while now. They've recently been purchased, as I mentioned, by Evernote, and that just increases the integration between, you know, that screen capture and then the ability to catalog it in Evernote, which is an awesome tool as well.
Excellent find. Nice to be able to work across all of our different platforms with the tool.
Yep.
So
I wanted to share a little love with our Mac users. We sometimes neglect them unless it's an iOS kind of thing. So this is our Mac folks. Sal, we want to remind everybody about our 7 Best series.
That's right. Coming up in early June, we'll be talking about the 7 Best bookmarking tools and tips. And I don't think we've had anyone share ideas. I bet you guys are bookmarking things. So write into us, call us, let us know what you use to keep up with this worldwide superhighway that is threatening to run over us if we don't organize ourselves. So
I have a feeling I already know what's number one in my mind, but I'm not telling yet. So. All right. We also want to remind everybody that we, for those of you that are final web users, and you know who you are, if you think you need to get some skills ramped up a little bit, or maybe you may have a project this summer to revamp your website and you had kind of forgotten all the features and how to do stuff in Final Web, well, never fear. We have some training classes for you. Final Web for Dummies or Final Web for Teachers online this year. It's not in person in beautiful Milwaukee or New Ulm. It's online, so you don't even have to leave the comfort of your own home. You can take the class in slippers if you like. But it's a one day for teachers, and that is either July 9th or the 16th. Or a 3-day, and you can take any one of the 3 days, beginner, intermediate, or advanced sessions for dummies. That's July 10th through 12th or July 17th through 19th. We're using Google Hangouts to do the training. And cost $48.99 per day, or if you do a 3-day, it's $128.99 for 3 days. So it's reasonable. We provide all the materials, and I think you'll enjoy going through the process. I know I really enjoy giving the class, and everybody who's come out of the classes, I think, done some good things with their websites as a result. So don't want to miss that. So sign up at bit.ly/ what is it? FW4D 2012. It's in the show notes. So. Hope to see you there.
One more thing I want to throw in here. I'm throwing you a curveball, Martin, is that this is graduation time in the Wells, and you can watch live streams of graduation ceremonies and great concerts and call services, either on the MLC website for the MLC graduation and call services, or on the Wells website for the seminary graduation and call services. And we'll look up those links for you and have those in the show notes as well.
Excellent reminder. So, is it the end of this week for MLC?
Yeah. Right, this Saturday. What date is that? The 18th or so? My eyes aren't that good. I don't have a calendar in front of me.
19th. Yeah.
19th. Mm-hmm. Saturday the 19th for MLC. And I would assume the graduation concert is usually the Friday night before
it is,
the 18th.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And then the festivities at the seminary start with Tuesday the 22nd, Vicar Assignment Service. And then there's a graduation concert on the 24th. Call day is the 24th and graduation the 25th. So lots of activities.
Very good. Community feedback, Sally.
Sure. A couple of things to mention. We had a comment on our show notes page regarding video storytelling. This was from Jimmy Pouts, who said, with the advent of Windows 7, the old Windows Movie Maker tool was replaced by the less capable Windows Live Movie Maker. Mm-hmm. And he found a way to get the Windows Vista version into Windows 7 and sent us a blog link for those instructions. So if you're missing your Windows Movie Maker, thanks to Jimmy, you potentially can re-grab that and get it active on your Windows 7 machine.
Very good. Thanks, Jimmy.
Via Digo, I tagged a page, a plan for technology integration. And this is just kind of an overview blog article that I read that gives you an idea of steps to go through, you know, how to pilot a program, when to take the plunge, and how to take the plunge with the full integration of a one-to-one program. And so maybe some good guidelines to go by if you're considering that, especially with summer coming up. Maybe it's time to take a serious look about integrating technology further in your school setting.
Very good.
And then finally, we had a Pinterest link shared by Perry Lund. This is a link to an infographic. I really got a kick out of this one. Thanks for sharing it, Perry. The title of the infographic says, "I took a photo of my friend that I want to share. Now what?" And this is really kind of geared toward maybe students, middle school, high school students, and helping them with their digital citizenship, you know, being a good friend and sharing what's appropriate online. It's a little bit of a flow short. flow chart. It goes through 7 questions. Things like, would my friend agree this is a good photo? Could I get my friend into trouble with this photo? Is it going to cause drama?
I like that one. Is it going to cause drama?
Exactly.
I have an 18-year-old daughter, and that's a great question she should ask herself. Yeah.
Exactly. So, you know, would it be okay with my grandma to see it? Uh-huh. And a year from now, how would I feel about making this public? So just, you know, take a moment, pause, think through this thoroughly before you share. Mm-hmm. And I think it's worthy of sharing it at a middle school to high school level for sure.
I like this. Yeah, it's from the folks at commonsense.org. They put out some good stuff.
Absolutely. So thanks for the pin, Perry. We appreciate your activity on Pinterest.
Yeah. Next week, we are, Sally, going to go down the path of copyright law. And always a little dark, a little scary, and but we do it on, at least we do it once a year. So we'll be armed with some good information. We have stuff on the wiki and all kinds of other materials that we'll be talking about. But copyright is important, and it affects everybody. So stay tuned. Next week, hopefully, we'll have an interview as well. So that's next week. Sally, thanks again for your contributions and your tireless efforts to make this show go.
Another one in the bag.
Yes. All right. Let's close the show with the music of Revelation, their song God of Wonders from the album We Walk by Faith. Thank you, listeners, for joining us. Tune in next week for more.
To the light.